VanWe Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock, and this is the special birthday edition of the VanWe Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWe.
And I'm Adam VanWe.
And I bet you're wondering whose birthday it might be. Well, it's my wife's, almost.
Almost.
It's your mother's, almost.
Same person.
Same birthday, too.
Mm-hmm.
And some other people we know. We're going to celebrate one tonight. But that has nothing to do with this show. What has to do with this show is what happened yesterday,
which was very fun,
and it was a birthday. It was the ninth birthday of the current bull market.
That's right.
And I remember it like it was yesterday, because it was the end of 18 terrifying months for investors everywhere and investment advisors everywhere. And when it opened up straight down again. And then it hesitated for a while, and it started to creep up. And I'll let Adam tell you how far we've come since then, including this week, which was one of those weeks. Remember a couple weeks ago when I called the week Silly Week or Stupid Week? I'm not sure which one I used, where all the news was being interpreted as bad news no matter what. But this week was Sanity Week, when all the news was good and interpreted as being good. And boy, did we get a lot of it.
With one exception, which I'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was also interpreted as good news, even though it was not good news.
Well, and there's certain things that are kind of on the fence and depends where you sit. But I am pleased to say that it was probably as much fun as we've had this year, including January.
Well,
because
January was fun,
but we were getting kind of used to the upside, and we weren't used to it this time, this week, I would say. Now, you know the rules of the game around here, folks. Callers first. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Chuck.
Yesterday was remarkable. Were you guys as surprised as I was that the market kept grinding higher, you know? And, I mean, I was watching the 10-year creep up to 2.91. I thought, oh my, it's gonna roll over, and then it never really took it out. It just came back to 2.9, 2.89, 2.88, and the market grinded higher. Were you guys surprised that the market kept going higher throughout the day yesterday?
Surprised? Not exactly.
Yeah, I'm struggling to answer that as well. I guess I was not surprised. But I wouldn't have been surprised if it had not held on to those gains either. So,
were you listening last Saturday?
Unfortunately not. I wasn't able to.
Okay, last Saturday, I said, I think it was toward the end of the show, that it would not make sense to me if we didn't revisit and set new highs soon this year. Because what truly drives the economy, or what truly drives the market, is the economy and profits. But the tax cuts are now 1 month old. People are just getting their second and third paychecks now with the new money in their pocket. And that's just a beginning. But the earnings season we just came off of is the best earnings season I can remember in my 17, 18 years in this business. And everything is just positioned so that the economy is going to continue to grow. And when the economy grows, that should be the number one leader of the stock market. So all this other stuff that's noise all around it kept us from being too surprised as it kept going up. Now, that said, there were some scary days back in early February.
The thing that surprised me yesterday was actually that the market didn't react at all to the news that Donald Trump was going to meet with the leader of North Korea. The futures were flat until that jobs report came out. So I expected that to be a little bit of a bump for the market because it's unprecedented. It's good news. It may reduce the nuclear threat in the world, which is a positive thing. But the market was absolutely flat. And then that jobs report came out, and after about 10 seconds, it shot up.
The futures went from minus 30 to up 155. Just in the refreshing of a CRT screen, it was just incredible. So it is kind of a funny question because we've been kind of conditioned that it could go either way, depending on how the news is interpreted. But no, basically, I said we're headed toward new highs. Don't worry about it.
And it had also followed the trend all week of buying into the close. Mm-hmm. Some of the days this week that started down ended up flat, and some of the days that were flat ended up up. With strong buying going into the close. And that happened almost all week. I think it might have happened all 5 days. That was the trend this week. It's a complete reversal of two or 3 weeks ago when everything was selling off into the close. So that's a really positive sign.
So now what really counts is, were you surprised?
No, when I was looking at the intraday chart, it just felt like we were going to have that typical close at the highs because the market was not rolling over. If the market rolled over by 10:30, then it would have been a different game. But it just kept grinding higher, and every time it dipped, the dip buyers came in, and I was just I was a little surprised. But then I said, okay, it's going to finish at the highs, and that's the way I played it. But now it looks like the inevitable trade is back to 26,000 on the Dow, coming into April, which, according to the Stock Traders Almanac, is the second best month of the year.
Correct.
So everything looks really good. I think the only thing that can kill it is a bad CPI number. We get CPI this week or next week? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. I haven't looked ahead, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as people think. You saw that in the income gains. They were less than expected, where the annual gain for incomes was 2.6% instead of 2.8%. You stay under 3%. The Fed's not going to be in any great hurry to do anything, in my opinion.
Yeah, under 3% is just playing catch-up for the last 10 years that we haven't seen hardly anything, in my opinion.
And three Fed rate increases are already built into the market pricing. Unless they go up to 4 or 5, which some idiot in my stack of stuff here has predicted 5 or 6.
I don't see it.
No, it won't happen. So I think it's going to be a good year, and it would not surprise me whatsoever if we saw 28, 29. It wouldn't surprise me too much if we saw 30, although I'm not predicting it. But things are good.
Good. It's pretty astounding. I've never seen a market like this. The other day they were talking about the 9-year anniversary of the Mark Haynes bottom at 6,500 or something. We were at 6,500 9 years ago, and now look at it. It's amazing.
It truly is. But that was sort of an unprecedented time in our history with so much going on. It's hard even to begin to describe where all of that came from.
This whole economy is what I call predictable. And I've got a little thing I'm going to do. If you can listen to the rest of the show, I'm not sure what quarter it'll be in, but it's called We've Always Done It This Way Economics. And that's why I wasn't really surprised. So if you can stick around to hear it, great.
Thanks.
All right, we appreciate you listening. Thanks for the call. So I will tell you all about the market and some other things when we get back. I've got a headline that just slays me this morning. You know how I love headlines. We don't have enough time to do it. I'll do it right after the break. So don't go anywhere while we pay some bills, and we'll see you right on the other side and really get into this market. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm going to give the trivia question, but I'm not going to explain it very well yet. But I will. I'll get to that, but it's related to some other things. We've been doing the series on long-term care, and we have alluded to the fact that it's called, in our office, wealth insurance, because it keeps you from spending all your wealth later in your life. Some of you out there might know a term, filial, which means it pertains to sons and daughters. And there are some laws called filial laws and filial responsibility laws. And they impact long-term care in that the filial laws for those places who have them means they can go after your sons and daughters if you become destitute and they need more money for your long-term care. Now, that scares me, but it should scare the millennials a lot more. There are thousands of millennials already shelling out care, some financial, some otherwise, but they're doing it mostly voluntarily. But this is something to be watchful for. How many states have already passed, in some sort, filial responsibility laws? A number, obviously, between 1 and 50. That's the trivia today. Oh, by the way, brought to you by Ken Bales. And speaking of Ken Bales, Ken has produced some cards that you people out there who have been winners have been waiting for.
Went out on Friday.
They're in the mail, folks, and thank you very much, Ken, at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 636-7888. All right, the market this week, if you can talk through that smile on your face.
So that was pretty fun.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I actually had to go back and double-check my numbers this morning because I knew it was a good week. I just didn't realize it was that good. It was good enough to drive all three indexes back into the black for the month and for the year. The Dow, as it has done all year, was the laggard, gaining only 3.3% and is now up 2.5% this year. Notice I said only and 3.3% in the same sentence.
Exactly. In a week. And it's March 10th.
Yeah. And the S&P gained 3.5% for the week and is now at 4.2% this year. The NASDAQ led the way higher. It's been the trend lately. It gained 4.2% this week, which brought its total gain for the year to 9.5%, and it hit a new all-time high on Friday.
Yay. So,
yeah.
My first prediction came true.
Not too bad for a little bit over 2 months of volatility. Friday's gains also pushed the S&P 500 back over its 50-day moving average, a great sign for the bulls out there. Much of this rally, 444 Dow points, came on Friday after the jobs report was released. 313,000 jobs were added to the economy in February on expectations of 205,000, so that's a beat by 53%. Sometimes that could be considered bad news and the stock market would drop on increased rate hike fears, but this month we saw wage growth back to its stubborn, slow-growing normal rate, and so the inflation fears were put to rest. It was a report where good news was good news and the bad news was still good news. Mm-hmm. One of those weird things.
But some of the good news was even better news.
That's true.
Jobs reports.
The both year-to-date and in March, utilities are lagging behind every other sector. They are down more than 6% year-to-date and only up about 0.7% in March. Every other sector is up more than 2%, with technology up over 3.4% in March. Year-to-date, technology is up over 10%, consumer discretionary up over 7.5%, and financials up 6.5%. Utilities are the worst performer, followed by energy, down 5.25%, and consumer staples, down 4%. The bond market looks like a sea of red for the year and for the month. Long treasuries are down 0.5% in March and down over 6.5% this year. Ouch.
Yeah.
Shorter duration treasuries.
And you know, we have not even had a Fed rate increase.
Not this year.
This is on expectations.
Right.
And the December raise.
Well, it's a given. So I don't.
Yeah.
I think it's the right trade.
Oh, absolutely.
Shorter duration treasuries are off 4 basis points this month and 34 basis points since the start of the year. So again, keep your duration short in a rising market. That's just a no-brainer. Commodities are kind of a mixed bag. Oil is up almost 4% this year, while silver is down 2.25%. Gold is up 1.5%, while natural gas is down 2.5%.
International, it's all over the map.
It really is. The commodity index is almost flat because it's being pushed both directions.
Make up your mind.
International markets are also a little mixed, although more are up than down. Brazil, being the clear winner, is up more than 13% on the year, while Canada is still struggling, down 5.5%. Mexico's stock market surged almost 4% in March, while China is up over 4% this month. So there are some real bright spots out there and just a few that are not looking so good. Don't know what's going on with Canada, if it's a reaction to what's going on here, but might want to stay away from that one right now.
Yeah, I don't know. The tariffs aren't going to apply to them now.
Right.
But
I don't think that was
the reason that NAFTA's under renegotiation. So Canada doesn't win by not having the tariff applied to it.
Right.
Necessarily.
It's interesting that Canada is doing the exact opposite of Mexico. Yeah. A couple
Maybe Canada should buy us a wall.
A couple of economic points. Inside the strong jobs report with some other information, the labor force participation rate ticked up to a five-year high of 63%. That's great news. More and more people getting back in the workforce. And just the natural demographics right now would lower that rate because more baby boomers are retiring than millennials getting in. So you would expect it to either stay flat or go down. So to see it go up means that people are actually going back to work for the first time in a long time. The other good news was home prices have been trending up in all metro areas covered by Case-Shiller. However, in some cities like Atlanta and Dallas, prices are now higher than they were in 2007, whereas in Florida, Miami and Tampa are the two cities that are covered, and neither of those are back to pre-recession levels. So Florida, the trend is in a lot, for most of them, the areas that got hit the hardest by the boom and bust are not back, but cities like Atlanta and Dallas that didn't get hit as hard are now back and pushing higher than they were prior to the recession.
Okay. Jobs, 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 jobs. Lots and lots of them. ADP came out on Wednesday at 235,000, which is a very nice number.
Good number, yeah.
Yeah. But on Friday, the BLS came out. The establishment survey came out at 313,000 on an estimate of 200. That is a big
53%.
But the thing that makes everything look even better is that people came out of the woodwork who have not been looking for jobs for a long time. 800 and some thousand of them came out, and 785,000 of them went to work.
That's fantastic.
This month, which means now we're over 155 million people working, which is an all-time record for this country. So to the people who were poo-pooing the Trump plan and so on, proof seems to be in the pudding.
The other great thing about that is that manufacturing has added more than 25,000 jobs for four straight months, mm-hmm. which hasn't happened in, I don't have the exact data, but it's been a long time.
And mining up 69,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. So there was one more little unnoticed piece of information in there, too, where for the past 2 months they added an additional 54,000 jobs. So you put that all together, and what you've got is an economy that's working.
Mm-hmm.
It is truly remarkable, and it is truly predictable.
And also great because that whole theory of the new normal of less than 2% growth, that's just what's going to happen forever now, has been shot and put away to pasture.
New normal does not exist. All right. It was 9 years ago yesterday that this bull market took off. And yes, you can have a correction in a bull market. What you can't have is a bear market because that signals the end of a bull market.
Right.
Bears minus 20 from its peak, and we've never gotten there in these 9 years before it took off again. So I may quote the Wall Street Journal headline from March 3rd, 2009. It says, stocks hit 97 level, signaling long slump. 6 days later, they were proven wrong.
Yeah.
A nice way to put it.
I'd say so.
Where the Dow is up since that time an additional 287%, I believe.
Oh, I can check that.
And I can say truly in the world of predicting, that one was about as bad as it gets. So why do people keep doing this? Well, because they like to make headlines. There's a fellow named, what's his first name? Menard. Scott Menard. That's interesting.
Menard?
M-I-N-E-R-D. Minard. Who knows? He says that we should be bracing for a possible replay of the 1987 stock market crash, which he says is likely to happen this year. Why? Because he thinks the Fed might be setting up for 5 or 6 rate hikes. But he also says in a companion article, well, that probably won't happen.
Okay.
Now,
which is it?
I'm not sure. If you predict every possible outcome and make sure that you wait long enough to say anything about it that everybody's forgotten, then you say, I'm the guy who predicted the fill in the blank, right? People do it all the time. I wonder what Harry Dent, people like that, are thinking now. It must be this July 20th that it's going to crash, because it was absolutely certain that it was going to crash last July 20th, and I was pretty sure we were here, and it didn't happen then either. So all this stuff, the higher it gets, the more people are out there trying to get Trump and talk down his policies and so on. Remember, you're going to hear it from every side. Don't believe it.
Yeah.
If you want to know what's going to happen, take a global look at what's going on. Things are good in the world. They're especially good here. People are happy. Now, there's some elections coming up. I hope the Republicans are able to convince people that they're going to need some help. But we'll see. They don't really deserve it, which is exactly what I'm going to talk about right after the break. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And on the line is Marshall. Good morning.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
I thought I remembered I have these old brain cells that don't work real well, but I thought I remembered last week Adam was going to take on the challenge of what's the deal with JEA?
Yep.
You are correct.
And I can tell you by the look on his face that he forgot.
I dropped the ball.
All right, everybody. We're going to hold him to the fire. Next week at this time, he will have an answer.
I promise. I'm sorry about that.
He had a busy week.
Well, listen, y'all do a great job educating us all around. This was just one more piece of the puzzle.
I'm glad you held his feet to the fire.
I'll have my wife listen intently, because next week's a spring spruce up at our church, so I'll be working hard out here.
Okay. Well, podcasts are always available.
Well, I will tell you this. The B.O.B. streamer really does not like iPhones, okay?
I wonder.
Is there an expert I can call over there to find out why not?
Yeah, email me. I'll email you the...
I will do so.
You can also go to TuneIn Radio. There's a link on our website for it, and that will work on an iPhone. I've done it.
Yeah, okay. Try that.
I think
there's
an app.
We don't want any excuse not to hear the show, after all.
All right.
Yeah. Take care of yourself. Yeah, we do apologize for that. You know, Mom thought of it yesterday and brought it up to me, and I said, Don, he's got it.
I thought I put a reminder in, but for some reason it did not show up this week.
Well, trust me when I say that will not be repeated next week.
No.
He's very diligent. All right. Well, most of us who watch the ocean are kind of mesmerized by the coming and going of the tide and so on. And same thing with a pendulum. It's the same type thing where it picks up speed and then it starts to decelerate and finds a moment in time when it stops and changes direction. And that's always been kind of a soothing thing for me, at least, and I think for a lot of other people. You can't really apply that to the market because the pendulum motion is steady and slow, but you can sort of adapt it without too much trouble to the market, because market goes through periods where it's going up and periods that will come down. So we spent a long time after the election with the market in a very decided uptrend all the way up through January. And it was obvious that it was reaching the end because there was too much up without a little corresponding down. Now, we couldn't tell you what day it would happen. Nobody could tell you what day it actually happened or would happen. But it did. And is that downward now changing back and over? I really don't know. But what we saw this week was a change in the attitude in the market about the news that was being heard on the streets. And a lot of it was taken very well. the Kim Jong-un potential meeting. They're trying very hard to spin that one as a negative. The jobs numbers are impossible to spin as a negative. And they're just kind of setting the stage. They, the administration, are kind of setting the stage with the economic policy that tells me that whatever our downside eventually is, and we may have already seen it for this cycle, I don't know that, but whatever it is, it will definitely start up again. And that is exactly what we were saying for last week. But Trump is a unicorn in Washington. He's the one guy in my history, recent history anyway, Reagan did a lot of it, but he systematically is accomplishing what he promised. Congress is holding him back here and there, like when McCain shot down the repeal of Obamacare, but he marches on and keeps making progress on his agenda. Well, that's just not that's just not done in D.C. You run on some things, then you forget them. Moving the capital of Israel, everybody talks about that. He's actually doing it. So here we go with the taxes. He said he'd cut them. Everybody poo-pooed it like it couldn't happen. Guess what? Cut it. And guess what? 91% of the people, as they predicted, seem to be actually benefiting from this thing. So, you know the term the swamp, what Trump designates the swamp, which I believe is an absolute excellent portrayal of it. He wants to get it drained. Well, that's proving pretty hard, but he's working through it and making some progress. Now, the swamp creatures are pushing back on pretty much everything he tries to do, from Obamacare to taxes, meetings with Kim, the whole thing. The election of 2016 was about draining the swamp. And I know that term came about during the election cycle, kind of by accident. I don't think anybody knew that it was really going to take off the way it did. But all of a sudden, that became what the people wanted. They wanted the swamp drained. Well, now the real pushback is coming because talk has turned to tariffs. Now, he ran on tariffs. He said, you don't trade freely and fairly with us, we're going to stop it. We're going to charge you for doing it. So why is the swamp pushing back so hard? Is it because they have been so successful? Is it because they have such vast experience with trying it and failing? But let's go back to about 1930 with the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. You remember when they passed that, don't you, Adam?
Oh, yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I talked about it last week.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a generalized, very broad tariff act. And all that means is whatever came into the country, we taxed
there were over 20,000 yeah. items covered by that act.
Right. And it was indiscriminate as to who and what had to pay it. If it came into the country, it had to. Now, I'm not here to try to teach you an economics course, but let's say that the repeal of the Smoot-Hawley was a necessity because it was a poorly designed, poorly implemented program. But now we're not talking about that. We're talking about specifics, steel, aluminum, specific countries, the ones that are not playing fair with us. So my question to myself when I started putting this together was, well, how's the swamp done while I've been around? I was born in 1950. I've been through some cycles of this and that. So I asked some questions of myself and thought about it, and I have some answers. The first one is, why does Trump favor tariffs? Well, foreign manufacturers for a long time now, decades now, have been selling things to us at not only below our market price, but at below what they pay for it. Countries like, notably China, subsidize their industries. Well, they have a good reason to do that because in China, they are generally the majority owner of the industries. So they want to make darn sure they're running at full capacity. So whatever they ship over here, the government just tapes some money on for them and send her out. So the argument is, aren't we just getting lower prices for everything that way? And it is true, we are getting lower prices because of that. What's not true is that that's the only thing we get. We also get fewer jobs, loss of industries, closed factories, reduced wages, urban blight and liberal voters who favor the welfare state. We have strong, huge, rising trade imbalances and a soaring national debt that's now well over $20 trillion. So it is not all we get, low prices. Next question. Why were we trained to believe that totally free trade was the ideal situation? Well, because it was a great theory. We believe that free trade also means fair trade. Well, free trade is not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. If we export to Timbuktu and Timbuktu exports something back to us, only they charge a tariff on what we send them and we don't charge a tariff on what they send us, that's not fair and free trade to me. Now, the term fair trade has been co-opted by a bunch of people who mean you got to treat Juan Valdez humanely and that sort of thing. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the theory of actual fair and free trade where everybody is treated equally. That way, every country gets to do what every country does best. Next question. Why are Republicans so against fair and free trade? Well, the old timers like Orrin Hatch have this attitude that we've always done it this way. So Washington, D.C., since I've been around, has always practiced, we've always done it this way, economics. The very thought of a tariff is sending them all into a hissy fit because all they can think about is the Smoot-Hawley Act in 1930 and how it didn't work, or how Bush's steel tariff didn't work because he only gave it a year. Can't rebuild an industry in a year, people. I got a couple more before I wrap this up, but I just want to tell you why it's different this time and why this free trader and the one sitting right over here to my left have come around on this issue as long as it's done well. So don't go anywhere. We'll talk about that after we pay some bills. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there, and I'm going to explain a little more about it, too. How many states currently have filial responsibility laws? And what that means is that if your parents, depending on which generation you are here, are in need of long-term care and do not have a way to pay for it, and you wound up being basically destitute, if you cannot qualify for Medicaid, if you qualify for Medicaid, your kids will be left alone. But in how many states are there laws already that say they can go after your kids for the cost of
really
your
care? Scary.
That is. And I'm going to tell you something that you should all be very happy about. So far, Florida does not have it. Be very careful.
Yeah, if that ever even comes up here,
If anybody hears about it coming up in the state of Florida, or if we hear about it coming up in the state of Florida, I am absolutely against this stuff. On the other hand, maybe those laws are meant to scare the kids into talking their parents into getting long-term care insurance.
I don't think so.
I don't either.
I think someone has a strong lobby, and that's why
exactly
it's happening.
Right.
If they can do that, you just think of the possibilities. Can you go after parents or children for student loan debt
exactly.
that you didn't co-sign on? I mean, where does it end?
Today, you can't even go after a spouse for a student loan. It's an individual
right.
responsibility.
As it should be.
And you can't bankrupt your way out of it. But you're right. It should not prevent getting married to someone with student loan debt.
Right.
Because you don't inherit it. One of the oldest lines in all of personal financial planning, one that we've used forever, is that you do not inherit your parents' debt. But this seems to breach that rule a little bit. And mm-hmm. that's why it scared me when I started
reading
about
it. It's not even inheriting, though. It's while they're still living. That's what's even scarier
yeah.
about it.
And
it's crazy.
This cannot stand, people. It absolutely cannot stand. If you do hear about anybody talking about it in Florida, we will lead the crusade to make sure it doesn't happen. Anyway, back to we've always done it this way, economics. Couple more questions. Why did Trump win? Well, because Trump isn't a we've always done it this way guy. He's an agent of change. And I think everybody around, the majority of people around, thought that we really needed some change in the way things are happening. This is just not the same world that I grew up in. I've got a thing I'll do one of these days. The world in the 1950s, what was happening then, and the world now, and there is not very much that corresponds. So those of you who have followed me for a long time on radio, years back to the prior shows, you've probably heard me say many, many times that the most useless group of people I can think of are elected establishment Republicans. They just don't get it. I've been saying that longer than I've been on the radio, and that's been 16 years now. Now, you call me what you want to, but it's people like Orrin Hatch that have got to go bye-bye, and finally, he is. We need some new blood in there, but we also need people to understand that a tariff is not forever. A tariff is a means to an end. It's a negotiating tool to bring people to the table and say, I don't like the way you're treating us. Therefore, we're going to take some punitive action. That is the stick. What's the carrot? You can do a lot of business with us if you play ball. Carrots and sticks work if you know how to negotiate. All right, well, from 1978 to the early 90s, I was involved in manufacturing. We bought a lot of steel, aluminum, copper, brass, and so on. And back then, we were really gung-ho. We were Buy American at all costs. We employed Teamsters. They were gung-ho. Everybody was in it, and everybody was doing well, and everybody was having a pretty good time. But things started to change. And as things changed, and I don't mean for the better, the nationalism kind of eroded, and it wasn't too long. But in our parking lots at the factories were a lot of cars that were not made in America. And pretty soon there was one of those in my parking spot.
Well, there was a good reason for that. Americans were making junk, and the Japanese weren't.
No, and when the Japanese car makers listened to Dr. Deming and found out that there's a very good way to build very good cars, and we didn't follow right away, we paid the price. But not only were we not getting all of our materials back then from America, we were importing an awful lot of things, and there was a reason for it, because our prices were high, and our quality was marginal here. So when we started to get better, then as the demand started to maybe shift back to where we were, guess what the foreign competition did? They started dumping. And we have tried over and over to change their ways. Bush did it with steel tariffs for a while. Obama did it with tires. Every president has implemented these things, and they have not used them as the means to the end to negotiate a better trade agreement. That is one of the reasons that Trump got elected, because he kept talking about the lousy trade agreements we have. I could not agree with him more than I do. So now we are left with industries gone, manufacturing jobs gone. Joe Sixpack has been ignored and forgotten for just so long. And as what's-his-name said, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. And that is what November 8th of 2016 was all about. People finally thought someone was listening to them. Well, it's happening. And who's standing in the way of this and many other things? Elected Republicans. I certainly hope that they get their act together, because this is going to happen one way or the other. And if it doesn't happen with them, it's going to happen with the other guys. And if it does, they will have earned it. That's my two cents. I'd be willing to listen to yours. All right. Did you know that you older people out there who have medical issues and don't necessarily have rides to see your doctors and such, there are services that will actually take care of this for you for free. And that's kind of interesting. If you can't do it through Uber and Lyft, but they're contracting with Uber and Lyft to get direct rides, you know, pick you up at the door, drop you at the door, rides for people with medical situations and without the means of transportation. But you don't go to Uber and you don't go to Lyft to ask for these things. There are non-emergency medical transportation companies. They are called Circulation, CareMore Health System, American Medical Response, and Hitch Health. And I think we can post some links to those if we can on our website. So if you go to the website, which we'll also tell you about in a minute, you can set up with them a system whereby they will get you a Lyft or Uber driver to get to all of your medical appointments. Now, you got to qualify for it, but if you know who you are, if you're having trouble with these things, you can probably qualify. So don't just put a Lyft or an Uber thing on your phone and touch it and say, I want it for free. That's not how it works. But you will get a ride if you can qualify through one of these companies. Knowing it's available, and we'll help you link to it. Our job here, we never consider it to tell you exactly what to do. We like to tell you what's available to do and then help steer you the right way.
Now, does your insurance pay for that, or how does that work?
It's a
free service?
It's a free service.
If you qualify. Okay. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
It is indeed, and I had no idea, and thanks to my crack department of everything internet for bringing that up to me, because I thought it was pretty neat stuff to share with the people. All right, I don't have a lot of time to get into some of these others, but I'm going to talk next week about the Savers Credit. This is a way that not even necessarily new, but people who make up to a certain level of income can contribute to the retirement plans and have Uncle Sam pay a whole bunch of it from your tax bill. It's pretty cool, and you can actually do it as you file. You can start an IRA or contribute to a 401k or 403b and get a good share of that money back from the way you file your tax returns. But it's not automatic. You got to know what you're doing. So that'll be for next week. I'm going to try to be a little helpful on the consumer side, because there's a lot of people out there that probably aren't taking advantage of all the wonderful things that this society can provide for you. Now, if you want to find that information and others on our website, can you tell them how to do it?
Yeah.
Or if you want to come in and see us because you're in need of some assistance with your financial planning and investing, we would love to help.
Absolutely. Just go to www.vanweefinancial.com. You'll see a blog, which will have a lot of those topics listed there, and you'll see links to podcasts from our radio show, as well as a little button that says book a meeting. That first meeting, always free. Spend an hour with you, determine if there's a fit, and go from there.
We're going to fill in a lot of the shows between now and April 17th, I guess it is this year, not the 15th, with some little tax tips and things that are new. And we're going to talk about a little theory, too. There's a new tax form. Now, this is one of those that the government has promised, and I'm saying this is going to be tough to live up to. It's called the 1040-SR. And as soon as I can get enough stuff together, I'll tell you all about it. We'll see. So look forward to some fun. We'll see you next week, same time.